This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 6, Episode 29, Working with Outliers. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about working with outliers, players who are far outside the norm. For example, we talk about a chap who has trouble tracking the ball with more than one eye. And we also answer a couple of listeners' questions. One about confidence, another one about changing from front-on bowling to side-on bowling. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, to playing it, to coaching it, and to all-round dealing with that magical bat and ball. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and alongside me to help answer your questions and talk about cricket for the next half an hour or so are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras. How are the birthday celebrations going?
Yeah, they've been good, actually. Had a lovely barbecue the other day. Loads of people around, and the weather was very kind, despite the fact that my Met Office app said that it's going to rain. It didn't. In fact, we all got sunburned. So there's somebody at the door. Sorry, dog's going to go crazy. You're going to have to bear with me a minute.
More presents for Garras.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Put that present in the pile, and then.
It's a present to myself. That one.
They're always the best.
As we're allowed to do when we get very old.
Exactly. You always get what you want then, don't you?
Yeah. So those are my smoking chips of the barbecue for the pulled pork that we're going to do later.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Okay, well, you've got my mouth water in now. So that other voice that you heard was the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello, David. How's things?
Yeah, good. No pulled pork for me, unfortunately. But
oh, no.
But
didn't get the invite.
No, well,
it's a long way to come for pulled pork, mate.
I heard it's good,
yeah.
I'll let you know.
Right, let's get back to the cricket. And I wanted to cover a topic this week around a conversation that I had with a player regarding his fielding. And this chap is a very athletic guy and a good batsman, bowls decent off breaks. Good all-round cricketer, but his fielding isn't quite what you would expect it to be for the standard of player that he is, if you see what I mean. We had a little chat about it, and what he said was, and I'm interested in this from a wider point of view, but also from the specific point of view of this person. What he said was that he can only track the ball with one eye. He's actually had his motion tracking tested with an optician, and he only can track movement with one eye. Which means that he, when the ball is to his to the side that he can't track movement, he's pretty much blind to the ball. He has to turn his head completely to get the ball onto his left eye to be able to see the ball at all. And that obviously brings in a whole host of problems with his fielding. If he gets in the wrong position, and he has problem with depth perception when the ball's dropping from a high catch and things like that. So I didn't really know where to go with the coaching on that side of things with him, because you know all the traditional ways of helping someone improve their fielding just don't work for him. So I was interested in getting not only your view on that particular case, but also on people who are a little bit outside of the normal system and how you kind of integrate them in if they've got something unusual about the way that they need to be coached.
Yeah, well, in terms of the visual element of it, I think it actually simplifies things, David, to be honest. I think what you do is you look at, firstly, what the best positions on the cricket field would be for that person. And I've got first-hand experience of this because my dad's only got one eye, yet he was a very good club cricketer. He adapted his batting stance to ensure that he could utilise what vision he had got as best as possible. And equally, we found he was a very good fielder when he was young, but we found positions where it would work for him, which was predominantly slip, man on the drive, fielding in the box, leg side, he became very, very good at. And all he would do was adjust the angle of his starting position from a conventional, I suppose, more square-on position, although most of us do have a little bit of a canter one way or another. Obviously, his canter was very much determined by his visual deficiencies, really, and the vision that he could take in. So I think it actually simplifies things a little bit. Let's have a look at the positions which are best suited, and also let's look at those starting positions, those ready positions, to be able to take in as much visual information as possible. And then on a broader context, it's a great question, because last Saturday I worked with Help the Heroes cricket team at Tedworth House, did a day's with them. They are preparing for a huge game. They've got lots of games coming up, but they've got a huge game at the Oval on the 17th of September, which is going to be televised and is going to be incorporated by with a number of superstars from the world of cricket and sport. Andrew Strauss is going to actually work with them and captain them on the day. Ian Botham is going to be assisting me with some of the coaching, or I'll be assisting him probably, thinking about it. It's going to be a massive day. So I work with these guys, and of course each of them have got very different stories and very different physical deficiencies. A lot of back problems, which then have a huge impact on the way that their legs work. And what we did with a number of them, and the coach that works with them on a day-to-day basis has done with them, is has made them a sort of more static, I suppose. So they haven't got to move, but what he's done is widen their base so they can produce power. He's squared a few of them up because their vision has been impacted by injury in the field out in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I was really there, as much as teaching them cricket, I was there to learn about them and the journey they've had, and also what adaptations they have to make. So it's a very timely question that you pose. I think you go with the individual because they'll be able to guide you much more about their history, as your friend has guided you about the information that he's got back from the guys that have looked at his eyes. But just little adaptations. So if you can't move, you're struggling to move because of back or a leg issue, then widen your stance, because that will, as long as you can, because that will help you to produce a bit more power and help to get your hips working a little bit better. As we know, that's really important. And we got some really good results out of some power hitting exercises that we did at the weekend, just by adjusting stances, getting them to sit a little bit lower, and utilize their hips if they had that within their makeup, that their hips could work. And so I found it fascinating. I think it's another level, and I end up learning more about the individual probably than they end up learning from me.
Yeah, we have another guy in the club who is missing two fingers on his right hand, and he has to adapt his game as well, as you can imagine, in certain ways. So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting challenge for the coach to see how players adapt to that and how they respond to it as well. Because the chap with the eye tracking problem has almost given up. He just said, well, I'm just not going to be a very good fielder. But the chap with the missing two fingers doesn't really say anything about it at all. It's not even a question. He just gets on with it. So it's interesting to see the approach to it as an attitude as well. Have you ever had any dealings with that kind of thing, Lavis?
Yeah, we've got a couple of guys at our club actually play. One plays third team, one plays fourth team, or they kind of mix between the two, and they've got one eye actually, and they cope really well with it. One of them's a batter, one of them's a bowler, which kind of shows that there's no specific restriction really in terms of what role you can play within the team. I think fielding wise, they both know that they're limited, not just by their vision, but also by their age now, with one of them, or probably with both of them really. But they understand what their limitations are, and I think if they get pushed in certain directions or towards certain fielding positions, they're old enough and sensible enough to say, look, I'm strong here, I can perform this role pretty well. However, I'm not so good at other things, and they know where they are with their cricket, and they know what's worked for them. And I guess if you're a little bit older and you've dealt with something for a long time, even if you haven't deliberately set out to assess exactly what role you can play in the team, it develops as time goes by, and they've done that pretty well, and they play a really good role, not only just with their skills, with their batting and their bowling, but if they can't contribute in the field as well as some of the other guys, which in certain instances they can't, they actually make up for it really well just with their experience and what they can offer other people and how they can make up for the fact that they may be a little bit light in some areas. They really make up for with their support of the other guys and their tactical ideas and those things. So I think where people do struggle, it's always good to think, well, I might not be so good at this. I might not be a great fielder, or I might not be a great, I might not be an express bowler, but can I find something else I can offer? And there are so many different ways you can contribute towards a cricket match. There's always going to be something else that you can give to the group. So just keep thinking about how you can contribute, and there's always going to be something you can offer everyone.
It reminds me a little bit of the chap who sent in a question a while back about he was thinking of giving up cricket and he wasn't sure what to do next. And we gave him some options where you can say, well, you know, cricket is such a flexible game. There's always some contribution that you can make. And saying, you know, just because I can't bowl fast or hit the ball over the boundary, I can't make any kind of a contribution is the wrong way to look at it. Cricket is one of those sports where there's always a place for you, no matter what, really, isn't there? I mean, there's always something that you can do.
I think that's one of the strengths of our sport, isn't it? And certainly talking to the guys at Help the Heroes at the weekend, a number of them had come, had played beforehand and then got injured and then actually restarted their careers because there was an avenue for them to play again through the charity and through the sport. But others actually hadn't played and then got injured and looked around to see if there was anything that could help them to replace some of the things that they'd lost along the way. Mm-hmm. And chose cricket as the option because it does lend itself, particularly when it's organised. You know, the physical disabilities teams are growing around the world now, and obviously charities like Help the Heroes it lends itself to supporting the servicemen. But yeah, a lot of them actually chose cricket as opposed to the other games and sports to replace things in their life.
And I guess maybe a discussion for another time is the outliers who are exceptional as well, the ones who find normal training almost too easy. That might be quite interesting to discuss at some point, but I think we need to move on now. So maybe I'll make a note of that for another time. Let's go on to the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the questions here, so let's get started. First question, playing good cricket is different from playing winning cricket?
No.
No.
Second question, perfection is for suckers and amateurs?
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, winning teams score more singles?
No.
No.
It's about this point in the show that we delve into the mailbag and get out some listeners' questions. And a couple of people have sent in those questions. We'll do our best to answer those. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And there's other ways that you can get in touch with us, which we will tell you about at the end of the show. But someone who has sent in their question already is Naman. And Naman says, I'm 17 years old and I've been playing cricket since I was a child. I play for my province and I'm quite good at the sport. For the past few years, I'm really struggling with my confidence. I'm not able to perform at all, even though I'm constantly working very hard. When I perform poorly, I start feeling depressed. I really love cricket with my heart, but I'm not able to enjoy it when I'm on the field. I tense up and when I bowl, I go blank and can't think of any tactics. My mouth dries up and my head goes cloudy. It feels like I'm just bowling. I'm not able to think. I also feel scared for some reason. When I'm fielding, I literally pray that the ball doesn't come to me. I don't know why I'm afraid. I'm scared to drop the ball and let my team down. I practice harder than anyone else at my school, and yet it's always them who perform. Also, when I'm playing cricket, I suddenly become quiet and serious. I'm not able to enjoy it and make jokes like my other teammates. I don't know who to ask for help, so I'm writing to you. Please can you tell me how to become positive and confident again, and most importantly, perform? So let's unpack that, shall we?
There's a fair bit in there, isn't there? And yeah. Fantastic, Norman, that you came to us, and you've given us so much detail. And whilst I don't think I ever got quite to the stage that you're telling me about and you were experiencing, I certainly felt a number of those things over the course of my career, and also have worked with players at all sorts of different levels that would have experienced similar things to you. So the first thing is, you're not alone. There are lots of people out there that have experienced this, and lots of people, more importantly, that have come through this to learn from the experience, because that's what it is that you're going through at the moment. It's a learning experience, and have come out the other side really well with some great strategies that they can call upon if any of these things start to reoccur again. So, you know, that's the first thing for me, is you're not alone. And what I suggest, because Sam will have loads of ideas as well, is that if I give you my first one and then Sam jumps in, and then we can keep banging things around rather than me talking for about 20 minutes, because this is a fascinating subject. But the first thing I'd do is that you're obviously a good player. You tell us that you're good. You've played for your province, which is a fantastic achievement in itself. There's lots of people out there that would have loved to have done those things that you've done and you're doing at this present moment in time. So well done on that. And the other thing is that you will have to have had lots of success in your past in order to reach the point that you're at now. So what I'm going to ask you to do, and you need to get yourself alone, a little bit of quiet, maybe sitting in your room or find a good spot, maybe a good tree to sit under. I like a tree myself. And and start to think back to your best performances that you've had. And when you think back to those best performances, I really want you to tune into that as best as you can. And by that, I mean turning up the volume inside your head so you can make the noises as loud inside your head as possible, recollecting all of those noises and sounds that you had when you were around that successful experience. And the same with the colours as well. Turn the colours up so, you know, the outfield is going to be the greenest that you've ever seen. The noise of a ball off the bat is going to be nice and clear, or the noise as a ball hits the wickets when you're bowling is going to be nice and sharp. And make that image and make those sounds as vivid as you possibly can, and really take yourself back into those experiences. And by doing that on a regular sort of basis, a couple of times a week, you'll start to feel that confidence that you have had, because success builds confidence. And the fact is that you're just not connecting to those successful experiences that you can. So really associate into those. And no doubt you've had more than one of those days, because you wouldn't have played provincial cricket and you wouldn't have got to where you have got in the game without having a number of those games. So every time you sit down, think of a different experience, a different positive experience where you've gone really well, and really tap into that and really turn the colours up, turn the sounds up, and associate into that as best as possible. And then when you've done that, write down those feelings, those thoughts, and those things that you come into your mind, which you can build confidence from. What did you feel? What did you think? What happened? And write those down. And a diary is one of the best things that you can do. So every time you do this, and every time you have success, whether it be practice or in a game, you can write it down. But visualization, when you really tap into it and get vividly into those experiences that you've already had, is one of the best confidence boosting things that you can do.
Having some kind of association is really good, and Gareth is obviously looking for that association between your current performances and your previous performances. It sounds to me as well like your training standards are pretty high, and it sounds like you do pretty well when it comes to practice. So I'd also be looking to try and have, or try and develop, some kind of link from our practice environment through to our performance environment. So as much as possible, we can try and have that realisation that actually it's the same thing, it's the same job I'm doing, whether I'm catching a ball or fielding or bowling or batting, it's actually the same skill that's being performed. So trying to develop some kind of routine, or a various number of routines through our different roles in the team, to try and keep some kind of continuity between our practice sessions and our match day sessions. And if as a batter we have a routine that we can get into and we can utilize it for practice, and we realize that we can practice pretty effectively, can we carry that across into a match performance, and the same kind of routines for our fielding as we're walking in or as we're about to get into our set or our ready position, and again with bowling. So ultimately what we're trying to do is help you understand that the ability to execute the skills in a performance environment as opposed to a practice environment are still controlled by yourself, and you're still in control of what's going on to a degree. So can you just have a routine that may just suit you a little bit better, and it might put you in a situation where you understand a familiarity between the matches and the training sessions, and it maybe just gives you a little bit more comfort and a little bit more understanding that this is something you can do, this is something you've done before, and you're comfortable doing because it's something you've done so many times in that practice environment. I was going to go on to something else again, but I'll hold it there, and I've got something else I want to speak about, but I just don't know how the best way to discuss it at the moment.
Okay, Gareth, do you want to give us another, throw us another one and see, and then give Lavers time to think of a way in for his other point?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the best things that I experienced through coaching, when I was very young, actually, in my coaching career, I got to work with Ricky Ponting. And Ricky Ponting was obviously the best player in the world, fantastic player, but it was incredible how simple his processes were for repeating and connecting back into confidence, because even the great Ricky Ponting dipped in confidence every now and again. And I talked about diaries earlier, but diaries are really important to Ricky. So what he used to do was every time he played was to write some information on the opposition that he played. So if he was playing for Somerset, as he was back in the day with us, he'd write down every bowler and what he noted about each bowler, because at some stage one of those bowlers could get called up to a test team and then he'd have that information on tap. But more importantly, he would write down his thoughts, his feelings from each day of practice, just, you know, two or three lines, or in a match, two or three lines, and then he'd see what the consistencies were that were coming up, both positive and negative. But the thing that was really brilliant for me was the fact that at the front of his diary he had 10 positive affirmations about himself which couldn't be argued with. So he had 10 facts, whether it be the best innings he would put, you know, the best innings that he felt that he'd ever played, which might not be his top score, but might have been the best one. That would be number one. So he'd write the date that he scored it, how many he scored, and who against, and then he'd write down, when I play at my best, I do this. When I get this amount of sleep, I do that. And he'd put down all of these affirmations and all of these achievements and what he does when he's at his best, and he'd recall them every single night before he went to bed. He'd spend 5 minutes, he'd look at his affirmations, and he'd, as we know, the subconscious, when you're asleep, does some amazing things. If we feed that subconscious, then it can build all sorts of positive thoughts throughout the night, and then you wake up the next morning having known that your brain has been doing that work whilst you've been asleep, whilst you're recharging, your brain has been doing a lot of work linking into those positive affirmations. So if there's a fact about yourself that you love, or if there's a thing that you do which leads to great performance, then write it down. And he had it at the front of his diary, but I also know that there's a lot of performers that have stuck it onto their fridge, so every time they go to their fridge that they see it. A lot of people that have it on the back of their coffin, so as they lift the coffin lid, their cricket bag lid, then all of a sudden you've got a laminated list of the 10 things that are most important to you, or the 10 achievements that you're most proud of. And again, all that does is feed the subconscious, which is where we can do a lot of good work to prevent ourselves from having these huge ups and downs in terms of confidence as we go forward.
Right, Lavers, what's your final
comment?
Well,
I'm just going to kind of move on from Gareth's one there. I think little notes like that, and whether you're consciously or subconsciously reading them, are fantastic. And having them in position where they can be viewed in passing throughout the day is a great way to build up. And obviously having a deliberate effort to read them the night before the game or on the day of the game, whenever it might be, is fantastic. I actually know quite a few guys who have a few key trigger words, I suppose, written on their equipment that they have with them, and they'll have I know a couple of guys will have something written on the back of their bat, or they'll have something written on their glove in a position they can see it, and it's just a key trigger word that starts their routine and or gives them a little bit of confidence depending on the individual, and that just puts them either in the right frame of mind or switches on the brain and gets them back in that routine or gives them that little confidence boost. I know one of the guys has got exactly what Gareth's alluded to there with Ricky Ponting. It's he's got something on his glove which refers to a favourite innings of his that he played. And he has that on there, and that gives him that little bit of confidence that he can succeed, he can do very, very well, and that makes sure that whatever the circumstances, he's got a bit of belief. Another guy just has a key word, which is kickstarts his routine, that he goes through each ball. So his routine starts by looking at the back of his back or up at the shoulder of his bat, where he's got a trigger word there, and that then gets him going and puts him back into that routine as well. So those little notes to yourself or those bits of information that you keep and you have around, you can take with you out into the middle if you want to.
Okay, so good luck to Norman. Next question is from Epic. A great name. And Epic has a bit of an epic question. Epic says, what's the easiest way to change from front on bowling to side on bowling?
The first question, and often we answer a question with a question all of the time, don't we? And the first question I'd have is what's the reasoning for doing this? And there may be a physiological reason, and I know that sometimes people suffer injuries and as a result they have a requirement to change their bowling action. More often than not, if someone was suffering from an injury and it was bowling related and they had to change from side onto front on or front onto side on, it would be the opposite way around actually. It's more likely to go from side on to front on. But I'd be asking why are you wanting to change? What are you looking to get from it? What's the advice or support that is underpinning this desire to make the change, first of all? So it may be that you're looking at someone that you'd like to copy, and maybe you've got an idol out there or a cricketer that you really want to base your game upon, which is a good way to go. But you need to make sure that you're picking someone who is similarly constructed to yourself. So they're like to have similar natural movement patterns to you, which are going to suit you. So if at a young age we had asked James Anderson to bowl like Andrew Flintoff, for instance, he'd have found it very, very difficult. So people do have a natural movement pattern, natural way of bowling. And obviously, some people are naturally very comfortably adapt to being sideways on, and they maybe have a little bit more time in the air, and they find that they can get in that through that rotation into a side on position. And some people are a little bit lower and a little bit less flexible in their movement, and they stay a little bit more front on. So I would first of all be challenging why you want to do it. If you were to do it and you wanted to make a change, it would be something that's pretty difficult to do. Or sure, I haven't worked with anyone where I've deliberately moved them from a front-on action into a side-on action. The only person I've worked with to do something like that would be a spin bowler, and it might be that you are a spin bowler looking for a little bit more rotation in your body. And we've got a couple of spin bowlers who we've moved around from front-on through to midway, because midway is a pretty optimal position where you can generate rotational torque. Have I got the right one there, Gareth?
Mm, yeah. Torque, yeah.
And so from that position they can do, and that's actually been largely driven by the arms to get them into a more of a side-on position. So left arm driving pretty powerfully across the body before it extends out towards the target. So that's been done through the arms, whereas a lot of people think that the rotation, which is going to end up in changing your foot position, might be led by the feet, which it could be. That's actually been more led by the arms and the shift of body position through the air. So I would suggest, if you do want to do it, after you've consulted why it was and the underpinning of the actual decision, I would then think the first thing I would do is go with the arms and try and work out how you're going to use those arms to put you in a slightly different position.
I guess, Gareth, the question above the question is, have you ever had the need or the desire to change someone from a front-on bowler to a side-on bowler?
No, I've had more experience of the other way around, actually, and not a lot of experience in that, because I think changing actions is, you know, when we're talking about going from a front-on to a side-on, it's quite a significant thing, isn't it? It's a massive difference. And as Sam quite rightly said, people generally do what they want to do. Their body will choose the way that it does it in a fairly intuitive fashion. And I'd rather prefer to modify and align all of the different parts around that person's preference rather than going from front on to side on. Normally, it's the side on bowlers, and again, I've got very little experience of this, and I don't think we do this a huge amount, but it's the side on bowlers that then start to creep around a bit if they've had injury, rather than going the other way. But I suppose the principles are the same. If you are going to make those adjustments, then the first thing that you do is you identify where you want the feet to land and how you want them to land. And then you do some reverse chaining, really, in order to build up the neural pathways to... you're basically learning a new skill. So start slow, start small, and then work your way back. The last thing you want to be doing is charging in off a full run, expecting your body to unwind in a different way. We've got to teach the body to do that, and we've got to set up those neural pathways in a different fashion. But I'd do that with any sort of bowling. I did it with an off-spinner yesterday who's had an incredibly successful year, yet has picked up a back injury as a result of just getting his feet slightly wrong and his bound. So we went to the bound position and we literally started at the bound position. So where do we want our left foot to be in the bound position? We're going to start there. We're not going to put any momentum on it until we've mastered that alignment that we want. His foot was going in towards the stumps. His left foot was going in towards the stumps. We wanted it to go straight, so we started in a straight position, and he basically went from a one step into that position and bowled. And he did that for 30, 40 minutes before we then started to put a little bit of approach and run up onto it. And at the end of an hour and a half session, he bowled six balls off of his full run to see whether there was any transferability. So I think that would be my main method of doing it, irrespective of whether I'm working with a spinner or a seamer. But I would prefer to work within the person's movement preferences, Sam said, rather than go from a front on to a side on. I've had no experience of that. The ones that I have seen have gone from a side on to more of a front on or a midway position to alleviate back pain. But again, you know, you've got to take it very slowly.
Yeah, and going back to what Leva said, really, it's down to what the reasoning is behind it. I think you'd need a strong reason, wouldn't you, to make a change like that. But it can be done if that reason is strong enough.
To me, it's got to be physical. It's got to be an injury issue. You know, I can't see there being a significant performance benefit of taking somebody out of their usual preference. So to me, it would have to be based on injury. I would need to have a lot of physio support, a lot of surgeon, doctor, strength and conditioning support before we do that. I think it's a very difficult process for a coach to do all of those things on his own. It's a classic case of where you need to have integrated support around you, because it's such a significant thing. You know, the skeleton and the way that the body moves is such a significant thing. And if you get it wrong on your own, then you could be putting that person in some really bad positions, you know, not just from a bowling perspective, but also from a future life and movement and, you know, all sorts of things. There's some horror stories out there, so it would need to be integrated, working alongside physios, surgeons and vice versa, you know. It's soapbox time on the show. David is up and ready and willing to go and will be his usual precise self.
I was running a fielding drill at training yesterday, and I noticed that when I suggested a particular drill, there was a look of horror on the face of a couple of players. And the reason behind their look of horror was they were terrified of standing about. It happens quite a lot in our training session, our senior training sessions. Someone will say to me, yeah, that drill's fine, but there was a lot of standing about, wasn't there? And activity is very important when it comes to doing training, and doing lots of stuff all the time is an important part of it. But there are times, especially with senior players, that you are going to do some standing about. If you're working on a particular skill and it requires some effort of waiting for something, as happens in cricket a lot of the time, then yeah, you might have to spend 30 seconds a minute standing about, waiting for your chance to do that particular skill. So don't be afraid of standing about. Activity is good for younger players, but sometimes a bit of standing about isn't going to do you any harm, and it might actually do you some good to execute the skill. And that is the end of the show for another week. Before we go, though, we do need to decide on our winner of this week's prize. That's the online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy, pitchvision.com. And the two questions that we had this week were a man's problem with confidence and Epic's question about changing bowling action. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Great questions, but Naman's question of confidence, I think, if there's anybody who listens to this show that hasn't experienced something like he has, then they've had a much better career than most of the people on the planet. So I think there's something in that for everybody who listens to the show. So thank you for the question, and have a good look around the resources to see which course you can pick.
Yep, and for everybody else listening who's jealous of that winning question, they can send theirs in as well. But how could they do that, Gareth?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right, you can get us on social media as well. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Well over 60,000 people over there. And you can tweet us by tweeting at Pitch Vision Acad. If you want to listen to this show every week, you can do so by going into your favourite podcast app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us in there. And also, at the moment, I've noticed that in the Apple podcast app, there's a cricket section, I think, all to do because the Ashes are around at the moment. And we are in there in the cricket section, one of the picks for a cricket podcast. So Apple obviously love us as well. And you can also go over to the Pitch Vision Academy website to get the show notes or stream the show directly using your computer. And you can do that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link. And there's the RSS feed and all the show notes and everything else that you'll need to listen to the show if you want to do it that way. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, fellas.